Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The official first day of spring is Sunday. We dream of summer. And the sound of a summer night. There's magic in the crickets and katydids, and there's songs. There's also life and death, insect love and baby bugs. We're treating ourselves today to a sentimental and scientific journey into summer and its night sound. This hour on Point, we're listening to the insect symphony of summer. You can join the conversation. Does the whir and chirp of a summer night send you remembering, longing for summer? Do you know what all those bugs are saying? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from New Haven, Connecticut, is naturalist and author John Himmelman. He's written field guides to frogs, salamanders, moths, and the insects that fill the summer night. His new book is Cricket Radio, Tuning In to the Night Singing Insects. And we hear one behind us right now. John Himmelman, welcome. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Cricket Radio, wonderful title. Why that? What do you mean?
Well, that title actually wasn't my own. That was coined by the first editor on this book. And it refers to the whole story comes from a friend of mine's son, who instead of watching TV and listening to the radio when he went to bed, he and his father would go out and collect crickets and katydids from the yard. He'd bring them into his room, and he'd fall asleep to the sound of chirping crickets and swishing katydids. So it was kind of his radio, his cricket radio.
Everybody around the world knows about crickets. Greek proverb says it's not summer until the crickets sing. Cameroonian, the cricket cries, the year changes. Madagascar, you can catch a cricket in your hand, but its song is all over the field. Are crickets everywhere? Temperate climate only? What's the range, John?
They're everywhere in the world where it doesn't stay frozen. So that basically they're not in the two poles. But wherever there's water, wherever there's plants, and even in places where those water and plants are sparse, you'll find them.
So give us a sense. You've gone out. I mean, you've done field guides before. That's not what this is about, though you've got some wonderful photographs in here of crickets and katydids. But this time it's more the experience and understanding the experience when we're out on a summer evening and we're hearing that sometimes quite enormous symphony of what's going on. Begin to paint that picture for us. Let's say you're in North America and you're out on a summer night and you're sitting on the front porch and there are bushes, maybe some trees nearby, and you're hearing a lot going on. If it's insect sound, what are you likely hearing?
You're hearing crickets in the grass. You're hearing tree crickets in the trees and shrubs. You're hearing katydids up in the trees and some of the katydids in the shrubs. And they're mostly males that you're hearing that are calling females. Establishing the territories. It's very similar to what birds do. When you hear a bird singing, it's calling in females. It's establishing its territory. Well, these insects are unique in that they do this by sound, whereas most insects don't make sounds like this.
We heard a cricket before, a Springfield cricket, very common here, but here's that other sound, that quite different, more of a rattle with a tone in it. What are we hearing here, John?
You know what that does for me? That's the true katydid. That brings me back to when I was a little kid in the summer, being able to stay out a little bit later, playing outside, and this song would always, I don't know if it's a song, but this sound would always accompany that. It just brings me back to when I was 8 years old.
I think I hear thunder in the background of this tape as well. That's more than a katydid going on. There's Zeus in there, too.
Yeah, I tried to get some natural recordings with natural sounds. But the true katydids, now you will very rarely see them. They're way up in the tops of the trees. The only chance you'll get to see one is if they get blown down in a storm. So you look around the trunks of the trees, and you might find them crawling back up. But they spend their whole lives up in the trees, and yet we all hear them. I mean, this is the sound of midsummer.
So we heard the cheep, cheep, cheep of the cricket earlier, and then this is the sort of big, I don't know, a whir, a twirr? What do you call this? What do scientists call the sound of the katydid?
It could be a croak, maybe. And this particular katydid is what gives the name katydid to these insects. It's a mnemonic and onomatopoeic sound because a lot of people hear Katie did, Katie did, Katie did.
When you listen to that, I hear a kind of a blanket, a kind of a big chorus with some chirps or staccato points in there. Can you dissect what's going on here? Can you hear distinct Katie dids? Can you hear different calls? Are they saying all the same thing or different things?
Yeah, this is interesting. What they're doing is they're chorusing. They're filling in each other's notes. One starts to sing, and then another one next to it tries to outsing it by joining it, and the one next to that is doing the same. So they create this big wall of sound that's used to attract females. It makes it easier for the female katydids to locate them because they hear all this noise up there. But it's a chorus, and there's a number of these singing insects that will chorus as well.
So it's a chorus because each individual member is competing to get out front, and then they inadvertently make a chorus?
Yeah, there was no agreement, hey, let's all get together and sing from the treetops.
Right, Tuesday night in the treetops, we're going to have a little sing-along.
Yeah, meet you there. It's them trying to outdo each other. They want to be the loudest, strongest calling male, and then the female comes over and sizes them up based on some kind of Katie did... properties.
Calculus.
But usually the best, strongest singer. And she chooses that male to mate with. And it's kind of interesting. I make the comparison to people. You know, a lot of guys, they start a band because they want to attract the females and they go for the lead singers. It's funny how it works that way.
So in that wall of sound, what percentage of what we're hearing there is male in that particular summer sound? Is it all male or are there female
responses? Yeah, those particular ones. Yeah, you're hearing the males in that one. In some katydids, the females will call, but it's a shorter call. It's a response call just to say, I'm over here. You can stop calling now. And it helps them identify each other. But it's mostly the males who do the calling.
Boy, talk about a sound of summer with that August thunder in there behind it. Absolutely places us there. And we're happy to be there just a few days before spring. We're going to hear a lot of summer insect sound in this hour. Here's a northern mole cricket. This is in September calling. There's also a wood thrush in here. And this is from, I think, if I've got this right, John, a pond's edge in Madison, Connecticut, not far from you. What do you hear here, John?
I hear dirt, 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 and it's telling you where it lives. They live in the ground, in burrows.
So this is the northern mole cricket, I guess, by its name. Not all crickets would share that burrowing trait, but that's this one.
Mole crickets do. They spend pretty much their whole life in burrows underground. And they're kind of, you find them, you find these little... if you remember those old Bugs Bunny cartoons, whenever Bugs Bunny is tunneling, you'd see this big mound as he went, you know, along under the ground.
Right.
Well, they create these mounds too. And you could find them to where there's a little hole where the male mole cricket is going to be calling in the females.
And behind that dirt, 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 we hear all that trilling. Now, is that's another species entirely. What have you got going on? Is that little frogs there?
It's a quiz. Those might be two spotted tree crickets up in the trees.
Oh, really? Even that
or
sort
those
of
might
that,
be no, that, actually, Carolina ground crickets. That's what they are.
Oh, so that high pitched trill behind a Carolina ground cricket.
Mm-hmm.
So you got two species going on there. Are you assuming they're saying the same thing? One just calling out to a northern mole cricket, would be mate, and the other calling out to a Carolina.
Yeah, same intent, different language.
And do they hear? We've got katydids and crickets very often, I think, in the same arena. Do they fill the same sound space at once? Do they compete with each other? Do they hear each other? Do you know?
Well, they all have ears. Katydids and crickets have ears. Basically, they're on their elbows, which kind of makes it easier to adjust where sound is bouncing all over branches and grass. So they all can hear. They're not really interested in what the other ones are saying. They're listening for their other species. And what they do is, again, like those katydids we heard earlier, they and the ones that chorus together, they create this wall of sound that makes it easier for females to locate the individuals. But they also, each individual cricket and katydid is setting up their territory with those sounds. If another male moves in too close, they fight it off, and there can be some pretty nasty battles.
We'll talk about that. Ears on their elbows. I guess I'm still wondering whether katydids and crickets hear each other, or do they only hear or perceive their own species? Do they, will they sing at the same time? Are they competing? They're certainly both making a din.
Well, what they're reacting to is their fertility. They're reacting to the temperature. They're acting to other little microclimate things that sort of kick off that get those wings going. And they call by rubbing their wings together. So there's a whole bunch of different stimuli that gets them going. Not so much the different species, but they're more interested in their same species.
And have you heard them? Will they all chorus at once? Or do they think, God, there's such a katydid din going on. What's the point of calling for a mate right now? I'll wait till they shut up and then do my cricket thing?
Well, they're calling from different areas. What we hear is from, our perception, sitting on your back porch, it all sounds like one big sound. But if you get up and start walking through the habitat, you find these little isolated pockets where you're hearing specific calls. So it's a lot easier to differentiate one call from another.
When you're in an isolated area, of course, we've all heard that lone cricket, whether indoors or out, and then other times when it's just such a magnificent din of crickets and katydids and maybe some peepers thrown in there as well. John Himmelman is with us, and we are taking a break from some of the really tough news going on right now, anticipating the first day of spring coming up this weekend and right behind it, summer. We're hearing and learning about the sounds of summer, insect sounds of the evening. His new book is Cricket Radio, Tuning In to the Night Singing Insects. John, stand by there in New Haven. There's a lot more we want to learn. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are leaning toward summer today and talking about the night sounds of insects, crickets, katydids, all the glory. John Himmelman is with us, a naturalist, author, and illustrator. His new book is Cricket Radio, Tuning In, the Night Singing Insects, and we're having the luxury of doing that today. A greater angle wing in August behind us. John, the greater angle wing, I think this may be a little bit related to your title here, Cricket Radio.
Yeah, and this is another one that's very hard to see. They spend their whole lives up in the trees. And I was looking for this for years. And because of where they are, they're hard to get. And I was at a party with some friends, and my one friend brought his son, and this was the kid who would listen to crickets and katydids to fall asleep. And he had one of these, and my jaw dropped. Where did you get this? I've been looking for this for years.
Yeah.
And he said, and I said, well, do you think you could part with it? Because I want to take pictures and record it and all that. And he sort of gave me this look, and said, okay.
Get back, mister. That's my cricket.
I mean, so what we did was he agreed if we could go out and find him something to replace it. So we went out and we went through the fields and we found him something else, and I got to bring this home. But this was the kid who really inspired that title.
The greater angle wing, and the boy brings it home for you. And, of course, children really tuned into these sounds, but adults too, and how they sweep us away. I want to get our listeners in here. I think there is a fair amount of pleasure out there in response to this. Richard in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Richard, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks, Tom. Your show reminds me of one of my favorite poems from childhood by Carl Sandburg, and it's called Splinter, and it goes like this.
Okay.
The sound of the last cricket across the first frost, so thin a splinter of singing. That's it.
So thin a splinter and singing by Carl Sandburg. That's fantastic. Does it take you there? Does it take you to summer, Richard? We're trying to give you a little foretaste.
It sure does. I could use it after the winter, let me tell you.
No
I'm
kidding.
I'm there.
Thank you for your call, Richard. Thanks so much, and thanks for the Carl Sandburg. Here's another from online, The Sounds of Summer. A chorus in the trees on warm days, mosquitoes singing in the air at night. Refrain, some pleasant, some night, not after too many months listening to the scrapes of snow shovels and plows. Almost a poem right there from one of our listeners. Anne in Plattsburgh, New York. Thank you for calling, Anne. You're on the air with John Himmelman.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
I was just thinking about all of my childhood memories and the the night noises. I spent a lot of time outside in the evenings during the summer playing flashlight tag with
my friends. Oh, yeah.
And it made me think, your conversation made me think about all the kids that aren't outside these days in the evenings. They're not out there, you know, playing tag with their friends, hanging out. They're inside at the computer, on the television.
Well, just get them out the door, Ann. Just shoo them out the door.
Oh, mine go outside. Trust me, they do. But then, you know, when they go to bed, they've got their air conditioners running, and they're missing this connection to nature, and that's so important to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, AC will cut you off from a lot of it in a hurry, but it doesn't take much of a walk out there or a romp with a flashlight to hear a lot of this going on. Thank you, Anne. John, what's your sense of our connectedness to this night sound of summer, this insect symphony, today compared to years past?
Well, I mean, we evolved with these insects. I mean, we grew side by side with them. Their calls, that's part of our psyche. And it's interesting when they want to show silence, an uncomfortable moment on, you know, in a movie or a TV show, you know, what do you hear? You hear the crickets chirping. And that's supposed to represent, you know, a bomb joke or something like that, but silence. And I just thought it's interesting that we show silence, that once we remove all the din, all the human noise, what's left? The sound of crickets chirping. That's how ingrained those sounds are in our, you know, in our memories.
It's kind of a baseline summer backdrop. And you say evolved with. I mean, how far back do these night singing insects go?
Well, they go probably as far back as further back than we do. They're among the early insects. And, of course, they weren't calling then. They were signaling, and that eventually evolved into calling. But, I mean, the caller talked about, you know, listening, you know, or you mentioned, you know, the air conditioners are drowning out these calls. And I'll sometimes lie in bed with the screens, and I'm outside there with them. I can hear the tree crickets in the bushes. I hear the ground crickets. I hear the katydids. And my mind is out there with them. You know, my consciousness.
Yes.
Because I know where they are.
Take you right through the wall.
Yeah. And it's just for me, they're not doing this for us. They're doing this for them. But, you know, the fact that we can appreciate that is a true gift.
It sure is. And it takes us right there. Jay in Chesapeake, Virginia. Thanks for calling, Jay. You're on the air.
Thank you. Great subject.
Thank you.
A couple questions.
Yeah.
I imagine that things would be different as far as insects from, say, the swamps of Louisiana to the mountains of Appalachia to the rainforests of the Northwest or the Bonneville Salt Flats.
Mm-hmm.
But this is my question. Which insect is the smallest but produces the loudest noise? Which insect produces the lowest noise, such in an orchestra, it'd be probably the tuba, and which one is the highest? And then are any of them string notes together to make a melody such as a mockingbird, and I'll take the answers by listening to the radio.
Wow, that's a pretty great series
yes,
of questions.
No, right. Yes, and
he wants to know about the who's down in Whoville, but let us pick it up. I mean,
the smallest and loudest.
What have you got there?
The smallest in North America isn't necessarily the loudest, but it's the sphagnum ground cricket, and they live in these quaking sphagnum bogs.
Where do those occur? Sphagnum bogs.
In the north and northeast.
Okay.
Do I hear one?
I think you may right here. Yeah, this is a no less sphagnum ground cricket. So in bogs. So this is a wet ground cricket.
Yeah, they live in these quaking bogs, and just imagine that. Imagine 100 of those calling at once. It's just this ethereal sound.
You say the smallest. What kind of size are we talking about here?
They're like 3/8 of an inch.
That is tiny. I mean, I've seen much bigger crickets, never mind katydids, nearly the size of your hand, at least in my child's memory.
Yeah, this is a little one. And so we actually went out trying to find one of these, and we went into a bog, and you have to push down on the sphagnum moss to sort of make a little puddle, and they come jumping out because they, you know, to get out of the water.
To our caller's question, does the volume of the cricket or katydid depend upon its size or not?
Pretty much. What they do is they're rubbing their wings together, and the larger that song apparatus, the larger those wings, the louder the sound will be. So the loudest one is really the true katydids that we heard earlier, that ch-ch-ch.
Yeah.
Because they are big, robust, you know, walking leaves.
Right.
And they make a very loud noise. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And the physical mechanism of this, I suppose it's different depending on what we're hearing, but you say rubbing the wings together, and yet that very high sound, almost continuous, I don't know, how does it work? Is it something like when you rub your finger on the wetted top of a glass? Does it have that dynamic going on in sonic terms?
It's actually like taking your fingernail and running it along the tip of a comb. It's one of the wings has a little scraper on it.
Okay.
The other one has a little file.
Yeah.
When they close the wings, it rubs the scraper against the file and makes a little noise. When you hear that trill, that constant trill, because it doesn't make a noise when they're opening it, they have to go really fast. So that and it's a series of pulses that to our ear sounds like a continuous sound.
What about low or high tone then? Can you differentiate and associate those with different insects?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And again, that's all from the size of the insect, the shape of the wings, that plays a lot of it. It's funny, as the years go on, I'm hearing fewer and fewer of those higher pitched ones. They have to be pointed out to me. And it didn't. I started this like 12 years ago, and yeah. I thought I heard everything, but now it's getting tougher.
I've got a lot of examples here from you. Do you have one in mind, perhaps, that would be a low-sounding one? I don't know if that's even... I don't know if I've got that in the large lineup of tape that I've got available here.
Not what I would call low. I mean, about as low as they get is that true katydid, just because it's larger. With the size, it makes a lower sound. But they're all pretty high-pitched.
Let's just go for one here. Here's a round-tipped conehead in September. What do you hear, John?
Sounds like a live wire to me.
Yes, it does, like electrical wire. Like, stand back
Stay
or you're
going
to get zapped. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and conehead is a cricket?
It's a kind of katydid.
Katydid.
What they have these cones on top of their head. They usually have these saucy red lips. They're very comical, the faces. But they live in the tall grasses and sedges and rushes. And these are really common in the east. And as you're driving with your windows open, it's like the sound never goes away because you leave the area of one and you enter the area of another one. And it's this continuous buzz you hear driving along the country roads.
Let's jump all the way down to Brownsville, Texas, and Richard calling from Brownsville. Hi, Richard. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I had a couple questions, but also some great memories.
Oh, please.
We have the bug of choice down here is the cicada.
Sure.
It leaves its shell on the tree.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And they are so loud that it's almost overwhelming. But I love it. I love it. My wife can't stand them, but I love it. But there are other noises that I really like and that I think are just as prevalent for me or as important for me. And he actually helped put me to sleep. And that's the sound of the toad chirping.
Yep.
It's just the... I love the night sounds. It's a great, great experience. I appreciate what you guys are talking about.
No, so do I, Richard. Can you differentiate, Richard? What's a cricket trilling, a high trill, and a toad or a peeper out there? Do you know the difference, Richard, when you listen at night?
Yeah. I actually have my field guides, and I look at them and try to differentiate them. I see we've got like four different amphibians down here that make night sounds, and I've got them in my pond in the backyard, so I can differentiate between them. And I don't know that I've ever heard crickets down here, although I see them a lot in the parking lots and stuff like that, but we sure hear the cicadas.
Richard, I'm so glad for your call from Brownsville. Now, those cicadas are outside what you're looking at here, John, because they're not just night. I mean, they may be late in the day, certainly late in the summer, and certainly they can be very loud. Everybody's mind is on Japan lately. I remember nothing in the world like the sound of cicadas from my years in Japan in the late summer. Absolutely overwhelming, sweep you away. But you're not looking there. You're looking at strictly nocturnal, John.
Well, and that's in a different group to the mm-hmm. cicadas, cicada.
Mm-hmm.
They call during the day. They're more related to leafhoppers, and they call differently too. They vibrate their abdomen in this sort of a hollow chamber. It makes that noise. But they're a good example of how we are able to stop listening to these things, to shut out sound. I mean, we all know the sound of the cicadas. They sing all day long, that loud buzz, that droning buzz. And you don't hear it the whole time. Your brain actually shuts it off. You'd go insane if you heard that thing all day long. But and so as loud as they are, as constant as they are, we do shut it off. And I think we shut off a lot more than we need to or should.
Here's another. I want to keep hearing these. Here's a fast-calling tree cricket in August. This is from the roadside grass on Tybee Island, know it well, in Georgia. Now, our caller Richard in Brownsville, Texas, is asking, you know, is also mentioning amphibians here and their trill. Mm-hmm. Surely there are going to be many settings where you'll hear crickets and little frogs all at the same time. John, can you sort all that out in the Symphony of the Night?
Yeah, I actually did a book on amphibians mm-hmm. before this. I'm familiar with their calls. And they do coincide, a lot of the amphibians, they sort of slow down in midsummer with their calls because they've already, you know, they bred and they're out on their own. So it's more of a spring thing with the amphibian, although a lot of them do continue to call. But yeah, there's a difference.
We mentioned cicadas in Japan, but here's a burrowing cricket in September. This is a Japanese burrowing cricket. And again, we're right there in the summertime. I loved your description of what's going on spatially when we hear this. There is an incentive for these insects to congregate, I guess because it makes that big wall of sound from the males that says to the females, it's good hunting over here, come on over. And they do, as you described, John.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and this one's actually calling from under the car I rented. And I was recording. I had my shotgun mic, I've been looking for this one for years, and I would hear it, but you can't find them because they jump down in their burrows. And I heard this, and it's in the car. And I tear everything out of the car. I've been, you know, a few weeks on the road. I had everything in there. It wasn't in the car. So I put everything in. It starts calling again. And after going through this three times, I looked under the car, and there's this one leaf, and under that leaf was the Japanese burrowing cricket, my nemesis. So I finally grabbed this. I brought him home. I managed to find a female, and they lived in my studio for a while. And then the female died, natural causes. I let him go in my yard because he's not going to mix with any other non-native species.
Right.
And I would hear this call, and I just felt so bad. He sounded so lonely and out of place. It's a southern species that didn't belong in Connecticut.
What a cruel, cruel Connecticut Yankee you are there, Robert. Salt Lake City, Utah. Robert, I should say, is calling. Hi, Robert, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Pretty well. What do you hear, Robert?
Okay, I wanted to tell you that I had just turned on NPR about the time that you were playing this segment with the classic Eastern katydids with the thunder in the background.
Yes, wasn't that great? And
I was amazed to hear this and thought, what is this all about? this is a crazy program. But anyway, I grew up in New Jersey, hot, muggy New Jersey, mm-hmm. in a suburban area in the 60s and 70s. And we had have a patch of woods in the backyard. Yes, there are actually lots of trees, and it's very green in New Jersey for people who think it's just a bunch of industrial parks. It's quite beautiful. But the classic katydid sound is all over New Jersey at night around August, and including a lot of thunder. And if there's anything that evokes my childhood, it's the sound of the katydids. And with a little thunder thrown in, it's even more so. They say that scientists will say smells evoke your past. I think that's true, but there's nothing that beats the sound of those katydids. And I still have family ties back there. And I have to admit, one of my favorite reasons for going back, as crazy as it seems, yes, of course, to see my aging 90-year-old dad. Yeah. But when I step outside in the backyard at night, it's an unbelievably emotional feeling. There's no words to describe it. And
Robert, we don't think it's crazy at all, and we're very glad you called in from Salt Lake City with that katydid memory. Here's another, the common true katydid. We're talking about cricket radio, my guest calls it, and the insect sounds of the night. I'm Tom Ashbrook. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point with the snowy tree cricket right there. That's recorded in October in the town of Wellfleet, Massachusetts. My guest today is John Himmelman. He joins us from New Haven, Connecticut. Naturalist, author of the new book Cricket Radio, Tuning In the Night Singing Crickets. And he's taking us on a tour of what's going on out there in all that magnificent sound. John, that's quite a lovely sound there, the snowy tree cricket.
Yeah, I like that one. That's also called the thermometer cricket because you can figure out what temperature it is outside by counting the chirps.
Are you serious? How? What?
Yeah.
How do you do it?
You count. I don't know how this formula came about, but there's a few of them. One of them is you count the number of chirps in 13 seconds and add the number 40, and you get the temperature by about 20, 30 degrees.
So that means that they speed up the hotter it is and they slow down the cooler it is.
Exactly. Yeah, as their muscles get colder, they slow down and vice versa.
Wow, the thermometer cricket. Who knew? Trish in Smiths Grove, Kentucky. Thank you for calling. Trish, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hello.
Does this bring back memories? Oh, my gosh. I'm reminded you had a previous caller who was saying that the 8C drowns out the sound of these night sounds in summer. And one night about 5 years ago, I was involved in our state was our area in a severe thunderstorm, and we were left without power. Of course, we're not going to suffocate. We lift the windows. It's sticky. We're on top of the sheets. But I'm suddenly without sound in my house. No refrigerator
yes.
running, no ice dropping.
Right.
But what's coming in takes me away, and I can't even sleep that night because I just keep listening and remember from my childhood. When we had no AC, I'm not telling you how old I am, but, and I would listen at night. I couldn't identify individual creatures, but I could hear those distinctive calls between them. And I would just lie for hours trying to go to sleep listening to those sounds. This is just bringing back so many memories.
Oh, we're glad for it. It doesn't sound like it was too bad lying on those summer sheets listening to all that with the AC out. We're glad you enjoyed that. Let me get one more. Thank you, Trish. One more right here. Steve, calling from Boston. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty well.
This is a lovely program. Thank you so much for doing it.
You're very welcome.
What this brought me back to, I live in Boston, I grew up in Kansas City. The sound, we used to call them cicadas, that sound, that loud sound, fills me with such nostalgia, like that guy from Salt Lake City. But for me, it also reminds me of my first kiss. I was in Loose Park in Kansas City. I heard them singing. I don't know what came first, them singing or me kissing, but I kind of felt like they were all one and the same.
Hey, Steve, what was her name? Can you remember, or do you just remember the bugs?
We call them cicadas.
No, meaning what was her name, Steve? Her name.
I did call her cicada. No, her name was Lynn. I remember Lynn. She's now an obstetrician somewhere. I brought my kids back to Kansas City and found the shells of the cicadas on trees. And try, gone to the internet and play the sound for them so they can listen for it.
You know, the shell of a cicada or cicada on the tree doesn't exactly look romantic like a kiss. It looks like a mini dinosaur, doesn't it?
That's what I sort of love about it, this incongruency of this kind of primitive, ghoulish-looking thing connected with this amazing Midwestern nostalgia.
That's great. Steve, wow. I love it. We don't have a cicada to bring Lynn back here. You make me think of a painting or something, Kiss with Cicadas, but we'll give you here a little rattler, round-winged katydid. This is in September from the Shenandoah Mountains in Virginia. This one goes out to Lynn, the obstetrician, and Steve's first kiss. That brings back all these memories. Now, I got a little bone to pick with you, John, because you say in here, and I suppose you're right, but you say, when you're listening to these crickets, and you can tell from afar which one you're listening to, or Katie did, we may hear romance, but for them it's work, it's mating, sometimes it's fighting. You write, there's no joy in their song, no celebration, nor was there sadness or sorrow. Those players were throwing everything they had into propagating their species. Period. Now, how do you know there's no joy or celebration? How do you know there's not some insect, ecstasy going on there?
Well, there are those who disagree. I just think with a lot of these, this is, as insects, this is how they get by. This is how they make new insects. And I find it hard to ascribe emotions to those acts, even though they do have an emotional effect on me.
The things we get by with that make new human babies have a little emotion and romance attached to them, for us anyway. Are
they
you sure
do.
Insects are different?
I would hope so. I don't think so, but again, there are those who disagree. It's an interesting discussion.
Let's get one more right here. I just love all these. This is a Davis's conehead. This is in August. This is near in a freshwater marsh in Georgia's Okefenokee Swamp.
Yeah, I stepped on an alligator looking for that one.
Let's get a call here from Mike in Madison, Connecticut. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling. You're on the air with John Himmelman.
Hi, Tom. Hi, John. This is Mike.
Hey, Mike.
I'm the artist who illustrated the Guide to Night Singing Insects with John. He recruited me. I'm basically mainly a bird painter, but he recruited me to get involved in this project. And I got to say, it's one of the highlights of my adult life, working with John and discovering the diversity and the amount of different katydids, crickets, and coneheads there are in the Northeast. In fact, John actually was responsible for discovering some new species that were unknown to this area.
Wow, that's pretty terrific. And have you been illustrating these, Mike, for John, drawing the different species?
I illustrated all the plates in that particular guide.
Oh, that's...
And John furnished me with... the reference, and sometimes, like John, I had live insects in my house, and I was painting from them. But we also recorded together, and it was just an unbelievable experience. And every time I thought I was finished, John would come and say, "I discovered a new species," and I'd have more work.
That's pretty great. Doing. And here, the subject sitting for you might also be singing for you, Mike.
Exactly. Yeah. But John is an astounding naturalist. He really is, and it was such a pleasure working on this book, and it also made me realize on how much there is out there at night.
It is amazing when you see the variety. The photographs in the new one here, Cricket Radio, are just great and overwhelming. The variety here, color, shape, size, and wonderful illustrations as well. Mike, thank you. Thank you very much for your call.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, it's good to hear from you. John in Newton, Massachusetts. John, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Well, hello. And again, like everyone else, really enjoying the show. One question I have. In the last 60 years, I've lived within 5 miles of where I live now, just west of Boston, not an urban area. Always had a lot of insect sounds. But I've noted in the last 20 years, I've lost two things. My yard is no longer the home of toads and frogs, and I don't seem to see anywhere near as many insects as I used to. In fact, my kids now are in their 20s, and we only had an occasion to capture fireflies once or twice in all the years when they were kids. So I'm wondering,
incredible.
Does John know of, in fact, a degradation in the insect population? Are they being driven off by people using herbicides and pesticides and all that kind of stuff? Or what can he say about... Not so much. I mean, I still love the song, but boy, it isn't as I remember it when I was a kid.
Interesting question and important question, John. Let us pick it up with John Himmelman. Thank you, John Himmelman. What about the population out there?
I think that's relative to where you're living, and certain pesticides will have an effect if you live near a farm where they spray for insects. That'll obviously have an effect. Habitat change will have an effect if you're removing. Certain trees, if you're removing shrubs, if you just have these lawns, sod lawns, these monocots, that's not the best habitat for a lot of the crickets, or things that feed on native plants.
Mm-hmm.
But in other places, they seem to be doing fine where that habitat still remains.
But is there a census that's done, or can you just take out something that would record the volume of the night and know whether we're experiencing the same wall of sound that we or others might have as children?
They just started one in New York where they started doing surveys in New York's actually Central Park, where they last year was the first year where they were surveying the different night singing insects. But there hasn't been that much of it going on, and Mike had called to mention how I found some new species for Connecticut. That's just, who's looking? I'm out there looking. Mike's out there looking. There's not a lot of people out there looking yet. So I'm hoping to change that.
Let's hope we're not seeing that big diminution, but I hope you'll pay attention because it's important to know. We want that sound. Here's a little more. The Eastern Swordbearer in August. This is in a freshwater marsh in Jefferson County, West Virginia.
Kind of like an old locomotive sound.
Yeah. Paint a picture of where you found that one. What did it look like around there, John?
These, again, this is a conehead. They have those pointy cones on top of the head and their red lips and has a really long, the females have these long egg-laying apparatus called an ovipositor that look like those little cocktail swords that you put cherries in for your drinks. Mm-hmm. And that's where sword bearer comes from that egg-laying thing. But they're in the tall grasses, just shushing away. And to me, when I hear this for the first time, it's summer already? Because you're driving around with the windows down, and you're distracted. Then I hear this, whoa, it's got to be July. It's got to be, or early August when they start calling.
Absolutely. You mentioned swords.
That's my first realization.
Yeah, and suddenly there it is. You mentioned swords. We've also been talking a lot about love, insect love here. But there's also, and you referenced it earlier, but there's kind of insect dueling that goes on. Some of these calls between the males can be challenges over territory. I spent a lot of time in China where they would keep crickets as pets and have very big deals, sort of the mini, mini, mini version of cockfights between them. You know, they'd feed them all kinds of stuff to make them strong and give them very auspicious sounding names. But these crickets will trumpet on about their turf and go to battle over that turf.
Yeah, they fight to the death. That's it's a pretty big pastime in China, and they will. In some places, they have these little clay arenas with the little crickets in there, and they have cameras broadcasting it on big screens. And that's what happens. You put two male healthy crickets together, and you end up with one.
Can you hear them when they're challenging in the night air rather than wooing?
They do a different sort of a back off call. At least the field crickets, the larger crickets do, that I can recognize.
Is it more of a chuck-chuck instead of that the tone, the high tone? Does it have more percussive sound or not?
That's a good description. It is more percussive, more abrupt than that, just the chirping or the trilling. It's, like when we say, get out of here. It's just a quick get the message across. They have another one that's kind of softer, more intimate for when the female shows up. And so they have a different call for that as well.
The way of the world. I don't know if this is a romance or back off, but here's a jumping tree cricket. This cricket's in September in around Old Saybrook, Connecticut.
That's sweet romance.
That is sweet romance. Scott in Boston is calling. Hi, Scott. You're on the air.
Hi. I had a romance story. I proposed to my wife in the summer of 2002. And I didn't know what size her finger was, so I just bought her a diamond. And I was driving down to North Carolina to see her and to propose. And I'm also a history buff, so I spent a day at the Antietam Battlefield in Maryland.
But you're a brave man with just a loose diamond in your pocket that could be lost somewhere on the Antietam field.
So I camped out, and I didn't know what was going to happen, so I hid the diamond in the bottom of my sleeping bag. And it was about 95 degrees, and I was nervous and hot and was having a hard time sleeping. But the thing that put the nail in the coffin was the bugs were cacophonous. I mean, it was like I had the radio turned up full volume.
Right.
And I don't know if they were crickets or cicadas or what. But it definitely made for a sleepy day the next day when I ended up proposing.
That's a great story, and you didn't lose your diamond in the bottom of the bag.
That's what I was waiting for.
It might not have smelled as good, but it did the job.
sweet romance, or at least from the bottom of the sleeping bag romance. I love that. Thank you, Steve. Here's a comment online from Jim in Austin, Texas. I'm just back from there, and he says, here in Austin, we see huge numbers of crickets in the summer, especially just after it rains. Go for a walk at night, and you see them crawling on the sidewalks. I mean, when the numbers get big enough, that din can be quite huge as well, John.
Oh, yeah. And there's sort of a peak of the season. And I know in my area, that's usually late August, early September, where everything is giving it all they got. Because what follows is they have to find their mates, breed, lay eggs before they die, which comes after the first frost or two, or sometimes three.
We've got behind us right here the Carolina ground cricket. Now, this one's in June, but I think, speaking of that end of the season, and if you listen closely, you can just about hear it. This might be the last cricket we would hear in a fading summer.
It is, at least in my yard. It'll be different for other people's, but in my yard, the very last insect I hear calling is on a cold November afternoon. I can hear this call. This is a lone Carolina ground cricket, and that does something for me. All the other insects singing ants, they're dead. they dropped out of the trees. They've frozen. You know, they can't make it through the frost. And this one always seems to find this little micro climate in the grass where it can hang on a little bit longer. And I hear this singing away with all its heart. It's a little stuttery. It's singing a little slower. And all the females are gone. They're already passed on. And I wonder, why is it still singing? And I think of the violinist on the Titanic as it's going down. Sure. They're still playing.
There goes
I think
summer.
Of this as that. Yeah, this is that one lone violinist still playing away as the frost has taken everyone else. And it stirs the soul.
It's a great image. And, you know, as I listen to it, I think I know that as well. We're really learning here that sound that says the end of that season. John Himmelman, this has been a terrific hour. We're ready for summer, and you have put us right there and even a little bit beyond with that Carolina ground cricket. I want to thank you so much. This has been a wonderful, wonderful tour. It's a great book. If you really want to learn about what's behind all the sound, tune into John's new book. It's called Cricket Radio, Tuning In the Night Singing Insects. John Himmelman, we've got that same August thunderstorm and the katydids behind us here. You're down in New Haven, Connecticut. We're so grateful to you for being with us today. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. I enjoyed this.
We'll go out with that common, true katydid and an August thunderstorm. Hope you've enjoyed this sound on the cusp of spring. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks for joining us.